Like
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to the Mod State Podcast. My friend, how are you?
Good, sir. Thank you again for having me on. And this is the big episode 125.
It is 125. So we're, what, a quarter century into 200?
Yeah, I mean, you know, who's keeping count? Clearly not us, because we keep messing it up. But
well, we are back. And like the last podcast, we said that we would be talking a little bit about Rudy Giuliani. And again, I do see how someone might be able to say, look, you guys are a day late, a dollar short on this, but it's not going away. Who knows? It could be relevant tomorrow. It will continue to be relevant as long as Rudy Giuliani is on the defense team for the president of the United States.
And not that I feel we need a defense, but in our defense, we actually did elaborate on this before it became a massive issue, if you recall. I mean, we discussed Cohen, and we also, I know I've mentioned a couple of times in the podcast that if anything were to happen to Jeff Sessions as AG, as the Attorney General, Giuliani's quite possibly your guy, and lo and behold, here he is. So we could say that we were a little bit ahead of the curve on that one, but anyway, it's just to let listeners know, we're not completely out of the loop.
No, not at all. And I think, again, letting the dust settle a little bit is better. Instead of just making
reactionary like the mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's sort of like checking your emotional IQ, right? It's instead of just jumping into this, we're kind of stepping back and trying to see, what do they say, the trees for the I'm not even gonna do it. I'm a George Bush.
It's akin to what I told you precast. My brother-in-law told me he'd been on Reddit, and our international listeners for sure will appreciate this. My brother-in-law is in IT, and it's been a fair amount of his free time.
Oh, I think he said this on the last podcast. Yeah. About the...
Oh, yes. Well, to the listeners who haven't heard it, it's really true. It's some of our European colleagues saying when somebody's talking extreme or reactionary about something emotionally, they'll be like, hey, now don't get all American on me. That's where we're at, folks.
Yeah, indeed. So before we launch into this, please, if you like what you hear here, head to the Mod State. Goodness gracious. If you like what you hear here, head over to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as YouTube now, where we're putting up various recorded segments of these podcasts and then other videos as well. So head over, subscribe, and you can, like I said in the last podcast, see our delicious faces and our wonderful faces, or beautiful faces, handsome faces, whatever it is, or not. You might disagree with us entirely, but that's okay. So long as you're listening, that's all I care about. and, of course, your input as well. So, all right. Well, let's for the international listeners out there, who the hell is Rudy Giuliani? And he surely is an American politician, an attorney, a businessman, a public speaker. More importantly, probably the former mayor of New York City during 9/11. And now... Right. The attorney to the president, Donald Trump. So he did, of note, he was politically a Democrat. Then I think he was independent, and then in the 80s or 90s
it was the 80s that he was a Democrat, became independent.
Okay, and then
the late 80s he became Republican.
He switched Republican. He was
the last of what's considered the Nixon / Law and Order wing, even though he's not.
Yeah.
In step with Nixon on everything, but for instance, he was the only candidate that was polling capable in 08 of beating then-Senator Obama. He's the only person I felt like could have beaten him.
Yeah.
Saying that he was not only relatively pro-choice, but first and foremost, the issue that got him was saying, as far as merit is concerned, when it's two consenting adults, the Republican Party needs to stay out of people's bedrooms. Well, 2008, you know, the Mike Huckabees and John McCain's of the world jumped all over him for that. Yeah. That was it. But Nixon was hardly a social conservative, being in favor of universal health care.
EPA.
I mean,
he's also had some other pretty legendary stuff. He was the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York. That's sort of where all the Michael Cohen stuff is.
Bob.
Yeah, it's where all the Cohen stuff's actually going down right now.
Right. He took the mafia.
Yep,
he took clean up New York City. Let me tell you, in the early 90s, you didn't ride the subways, especially at night.
Yeah. So he did at the time, was it under Giuliani that they did the stop and frisk, which has been fairly controversial?
It didn't start under him. He didn't originate that by any means, but you know, he makes the argument, you know, he made it on CNN. When he was accused of permitting a racist policy, he immediately shot back and he said, "Do you realize how drastically we reduced the murder rate in the said minority areas?" I mean, it is true. Had a point.
Yeah, I mean the facts are there. I guess it's hard to you sort of have to do the calculations, like how many innocent bystanders are we going to kill in this bomb. And there were a lot of innocent bystanders that some people believe their Fourth Amendment rights were very much infringed upon. But
you can reasonably look back and argue that the end justified the means there in New York. Because look, I mean, it was a city that the front page of the New York Times had one word for, and it was ungovernable.
I was going to say it was pretty much like Gotham without Batman.
I'm serious. I wasn't alive in the 70s, but I got this. He's passed away since. A dear friend of mine who's a chef at the excellent Walnut Circle Grill in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, but Mr. Hoyt Tanner was a beat cop in the Bronx during the 70s, and he said, "You ever seen The Warriors?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, minus the goofy costumes, it was true. There were 100,000 gang members, 30,000 cops." He said it was out of control.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just have to go and look at, just watch old beat cop movies and undercover narcotics type cop videos.
Warriors. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerk.
Additionally, he was named Times Person of the Year in 2001 and given an honorary knighthood in 2002 by Queen Elizabeth. And this was all for his leadership in September 11th, 2001. So anyway, I guess it's just kind of a bit of a background on him. And for those who don't really know who he is, he's been a fairly he's been in the spotlight for quite some time in American politics and whatnot. So, but really what it gets, so what we do know is that he joined the defense team for President Donald Trump, and really quickly, right out of the gate, he was on CNN and actually it was Fox with Sean Hannity, and he essentially just admitted to the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels. And he said it wasn't campaign money. It was completely legal.
It had been established the payment had been made.
Yes.
He simply clarified, and upon the offer of Sean Hannity rephrase, he simply made, "I love Sean Hannity's reaction. He just couldn't handle it."
No, but he couldn't.
Giuliani reiterated that, no, this was orchestrated. It wasn't some haphazard thing.
So pretty much what ensues after this is a portrayal of Rudy Giuliani as an unhinged, uneducated, just out of his mind attorney for the President of the United States. Because what did happen, however, let me just tell you, because I don't mean to like sort of run over what you were going to say here, but we do know as facts is after this is the President of the United States, when he was questioned about Rudy Giuliani's testimony, quote unquote, air quotes, testimony on Sean Hannity, the President said, well, hold on, guys, the Rudy Giuliani is new to the team, and he doesn't have all his facts right yet, so just bear with us here. So that did happen, and eventually it sort of come out that yes, there was a transaction, and the investigation moves forward, and Rudy Giuliani continues to be his attorney. So the question here is,
I'm not sure you're driving at me. Are you asking? Are you saying they're not on the same page?
No. So what the proposal or the discussion was precast was, is there a method to this madness? Is Rudy Giuliani unhinged and going crazy? And as the mainstream media says, is he just trying to soak up the spotlight with his waning days in politics? Or is there a method to this?
Over.
Or, well, yeah, but I mean just in the spotlight in general. Or is there a method to the madness? And so I think you had proposed...
it's two different topics here, for one. I mean, is there a method to Giuliani's madness, and is there a method to Trump's, or two completely different discussions?
Which is interesting, because you'd figure they would try to be on the same page. So my question is...
No, I don't mean it that way.
Yeah, I guess what you had told me, and this is why I was trying not to overstep here, but you had said, look, it would make sense from a perspective... from a strategy standpoint, that Rudy Giuliani would step up and say, what do I need to know? And here's what we need to do. We need to go ahead and just admit or talk about this exchange of monies. And it, because if the media finds out before we tell them, then it's going to look far worse. And then what happened is they went ahead and did it. And there was this sort of back and forth with the Trump administration for like 24 hours. Like, well, he doesn't really know what's actually going on, guys. So that's where my question sort of, I didn't mean to just jump in there and...
No.
So, I'll give you a moment to respond to all of that craziness.
Well, there's not any sort of major response here, other than the fact that I think at times the president will watch the news media, the mainstream media, and not like what he hears. But clearly, the fact that the narrative, however convoluted it may seem when Ms. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is doing the press briefings, the fact is the narrative, as far as the answer that Giuliani gave, has not, as far as the framework goes, changed.
Yeah.
The fact is, from day one, he stated what appears to be the actual facts, and that hasn't changed as far as the administration has confirmed the transaction occurred, whether it was Michael Cohen doing something that is not heretofore unheard of. There have been attorneys that would assume, you know, they've been managing this client's business by and large for the most part for 30 years, for example. And yeah, I'm going to take care of this and I'll bill them. I mean, that's not unheard of.
Yeah.
Okay. But the issue, I think you're correct. We had one of our sources who's a longstanding, you know, attorney for 30 plus years, had a time in federal service in the 70s. And he made this, is clear to me as far as his take on it goes, and he's right there in New England, and he made the case, said, look, Rudy Giuliani, day one, he and Donald Trump, they made it clear they're on a first-name basis in their private meetings. Day one, night one, whichever, Rudy Giuliani sat down with the Donald, the big man, and like you said, he said, look, anything else that I need to know, because remember, Giuliani just sold his 500 attorneys plus share law firm, his share in it, you know, for $1 billion plus. Okay.
Yeah.
So the guy's not hurting for money, but he's also saying, hey, I'm coming on board here. We need to be on the same page or as close to it. Because remember, there were a couple of things unusual about this. Number one, that Giuliani made a statement so quickly in the first place after coming on board.
Yeah. Okay,
so of course, times the president's position is a bit, shall we say, fluid.
Sure.
So there's any number of possibilities there. But the biggest thing, second, last but certainly not least here, and I think you'll want to dive into this a little bit, is it was very unusual the fact that the statement didn't come from the press secretary. Ms. Sarah Huckabee Sanders isn't the one who delivered this statement. It didn't come from the chief of staff. It came from someone who... I don't even know that Rudy Giuliani has an official title yet, other than, you know, chief legal strategist, chief legal advisor. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But the point is, yes, he was hired by the administration, but so quickly gives a statement. And then the fact that he made it not to the news media, but on the news media. And again, it didn't come directly from the White House. So you've got the president's attorney serving in an official capacity, doesn't give a press release, doesn't make a statement through Sarah Huckabee Sanders, instead, forget the Sean Hannity, but goes on a mainstream news outlet to make these statements. It was very unorthodox, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, it was certainly unorthodox. However, the place that he did do it, whether it was just a press release or, I mean, it was on friendly territory. So really, I think he would know that Sean Hannity is not going to dig deep and ask some really interesting, like, the tough questions. He really had no idea what to say. And maybe that was part of the strategy. Like, let's just blindside him with it. And they'll be such, you know, we're talking about a, a show that he's doing. I mean, there's this massive production behind it. He's got an earpiece in. They tell him when to stop. They tell him when to start. They tell him what direction to go. When you drop that bomb, everything stops. Everyone's scrambling. And I think Sean Hannity did the best he could with it. And he's on friendly territory. We're not talking like this is Jake Tapper or something like that.
You got to remember, Giuliani didn't forget how he was treated in 08.
No, I do get that. So I guess the coming back to the question is, okay, so who is Rudy Giuliani in this entire thing? I would say that there has been times where Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press secretary for the president, has said, you know, this is something for the legal team to discuss. This is not, I'm here to talk about America. I'm here to talk about policies moving forward. I'm here to answer questions about that. I'm not here to answer questions about $130,000 payment. Because that's something that the president might not make privy to her, because, you know, it's sort of like more people knowing what actually is going on is probably less advantageous.
Real quick, let me reframe kind of where I was coming from the question, because I want you to be able to fully respond to this. Where I'm coming from with the unorthodoxy specifically is, I get Giuliani getting involved and he's a go-getter. All right, so day one, he's going to do something, right? Okay, I get that. What's really strange is it would be like you and I issuing, depending well on Unlimited, about Mod State is going to issue an official statement. This was clearly sanctioned by the administration. But instead of doing it through a press release or something on the site or a podcast or a video on YouTube, a surrogate, like an ancillary contributor, just comes out with a statement while they're appearing on Politico's podcast. It was just bizarre. And the fact that, again, it could have been issued by Giuliani, but you would think he would have done it side by side with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She would have called him up to the podium, or there would have been an official press release. The manner, there was no preface to this whatsoever.
So I have a thought on this, and I've thought about this quite a bit, and thank you for sort of pricking my memory here. So let's, I agree that that's probably the more professional way to do that. However, in today's age in America, when you hear things over and over, you hear things from news sources that you continue to trust and depend upon for your news, over time, you become primed, and everything that they say is sort of gospel. It's like, this is the truth. These are the people that I rely on for my information. They're my team. So he can do two things on this platform. The first is he doesn't have to do an official press release where it says the president of the United States actually did blah, 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 $130,000. And what he could do is it's actually smart. What he could do is downplay what a big deal it was. It's a big deal when you make a press conference side by side with the press secretary. It's a big deal when you're going to make these official statements. But if you get on a friendly news network with a friendly audience watching and say, yeah, no, he did it. I mean, and then he comes on, he says, listen, he didn't say it on Sean Hannity, however he did follow-ups on CNN. He said, listen, $130,000, $1.3 million is hush money, not $130,000. So what he does is he tries to normalize the process, and he tries to just downplay what a big deal it is. Like, look, I'm the president's lawyer. This is not a big deal. He did it. Whatever, it's not campaign. You can look into it. It's not campaign. He did it. And we're just coming out with it. So he could do it twofold. He could just send a very innocuous message to friendly territory, and he knew that there wouldn't be, it's just less sterile, right? Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
So I really do think that's what I was thinking about. I mean, this is kind of a smart move on his part. He looks disorganized. He didn't really look as disorganized on Sean Hannity as he looked disorganized on CNN, but that's less friendly territory. People are going to ask the tougher questions at CNN, and he had to go do that. I mean, he didn't have to do that. However, the time to make a press release was over at that point.
He had to, because this is his job. And,
yes.
And remember, Mayor Giuliani was my guy politically as far as the 2008 race goes. I wish he had gotten involved in 2012. But he certainly has changed a lot of his, I don't want to say his positions, because he hasn't elaborated on his platform since, but he certainly changed as far as his rhetoric goes. So bear that in mind. He was definitely my vision of a modern Nixon Republican, and he was even termed as much in 08, but a lot's changed.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess you can... I mean, we hold our politicians to this standard that they have to be the same throughout their entire career, but you do make ideological changes and whatnot. But again,
I would say from being a Nixon Republican, you know, a social liberal and a hawk slash hardliner in terms of defense and being in control, as you put it, but limited. That's a strong shift.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of crazy that, like, what happens in life changes or massive life changes that you have where it's like, look, you get into law and then you see the shitty part of the world. And now all of a sudden you kind of take this stance for law and order and those things just sort of tumble from there.
What I was getting at more is it's just strange to see someone from 2008, I suppose, whom I could completely, for the most part, be on board with his platform to now, not that I disapprove of what he's doing, not that he gives a damn what I think, okay, but to shift gears in this direction so hard, again, he doesn't have to have a political platform anymore. He's a lawyer, so in his essence, he's acting for someone who's an actor, you know, that's all. It's just interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's some other things too now that's fairly interesting. And when I use the idea of like going on Fox and Friends and friendly networks and having more candid type interview conversations as opposed to press releases, that he can really, he can really kind of shift a narrative if he wants to. Like, for example, he just came out and he said, Robert Mueller, he's wrapping up this whole thing by September 1st before the midterms. He doesn't want it to like dictate the political vote the vote. He doesn't want any of that. So he's going to wrap it up by September 1st. He puts that out there, man. He puts that out there on a platform that people are going to take that. He can sort of shift the narrative. He can, you know, there's a group of people out there that want this investigation over, but if you can just put this,
he's doing a brilliant job.
Well, I mean, I guess maybe the more I think about it, the more he's actually, his strategy is a little bit more insinuous than I think. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, it's just a strategy.
I'm simply looking at this as just tactics. I'm agreeing with you in the sense that, yeah, I think it was unorthodox, but it was effective. And we're talking about President Trump, per the Politico article I sent you, he's already building a grassroots team, a basic street level team, by once again going around the media and going around the Republican Party's mechanisms. It's the same guy that took it, campaign via Twitter, okay? Yeah. And has never really stopped. It's unorthodox, but it's effective. And I think Giuliani has effectively augmented that. That leads us to the greater question here, though. Beyond Mayor Giuliani, who, there is a method to his madness because of the fact he's being paid to do a job.
Yeah, that too.
As far as President Trump goes, who is donating his salary to various causes, as president, his presidential salary, the bigger question you would pose, and I want you to open with here, or you to open on this, is there a method to President Trump's madness overall?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because I think that sort of rolls into
A lot of things,
but
the thunder will roll.
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple things about the president that are sort of will be unchangeable and are a product of who he has been in the entertainment industry for years. He's a New York guy. He's used to rolling with the elites. He's used to getting his way. And I really don't think what you have. Okay. The bottom line is when it comes to trolling, he's an expert. I think the president of the United States knows how to effectively say the right things to get the right response. And I think he will continue to like that spotlight. I mean, he is the most powerful person in the world. All he has to do is literally just tweet something out there, and he's going to get the same response over and over and over and over. It's up to the American people to not respond in, like, that would be the most destructive thing for the president of the United States, is if people didn't respond to his trolling, because that is what it is. There's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of stuff that he does tweet that isn't trolling. It's just, it's platform
Let
stuff.
Let me ask you a one bravo here.
Go ahead.
Just kind of a one bravo here real quick. You don't pay any serious credence, though, or lend any serious credibility, rather, to, this is a largely left-leaning mainstream media proposition. I've seen it, the HuffPost, the Washington Post, Salon, specifically Slate, that this is his best imitation of the Hitler propaganda machine. Don't you feel that's a little bit strong?
I don't. So here's the one thing. I don't think Donald Trump has enough knowledge of political ideologies, etc., to have some sort of Hitler platform. I think that's giving the president of the United States. I think that's. I mean, he knows. He knows what it is. I mean, I just don't think. I think comparing the president to Hitler or the beginnings of Hitler historically, I don't think Donald Trump is anywhere near to as insidious as Hitler. I just don't think they're on the same political wave or the same ideological waveform. They're just not. Yes, does he say some crazy stuff? Is he disparaging? Does he do a very...
But is he a genocidal sociopath?
No, I don't. But what people do say that's is... I think what people wonder is, like, well, was Hitler a genocidal maniac when he started all of this? I don't know. I'm not a history professor. I'm not a huge Hitler buff here.
Well, I'd answer them with this. You know, what do you feel about Time magazine in retrospect making him man of the year in 1938? You got to remember, there was a lot of left-leaning folks that thought the New York Times, they came away from the Olympics in Berlin saying, hey, you know, these guys, I think they're actually okay. There's a lot of westward sentiment.
Yeah. So I do think, what is the phrase, power corrupts?
Absolutely.
So I think that it's sort of like if you were to give this man, and not so much the man himself, but maybe the people he surrounds himself with, if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
Yeah.
If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And I think that's what people are worried about. It's like, look, we're not unifying the nation. We're pitting immigrants against American citizens or people that have had generations of families here. We're moving back to law and order. And that is a noose that they're trying to tighten around. I guess it's a power noose, and I could see that. I mean, when you have less of an emphasis on helping people versus advancing political platforms to police our borders. I'm not saying these things are inherently wrong. I think there needs to be security, but when you have an administration prior that said, look, we want to move for healthcare for all, we would like to see everybody have the same opportunity, not the guarantee for the opportunity, but the best opportunity they can. Let's put more funding in education. Let's do X, Y, and Z. And you move in and you sort of tear a lot of those things away and try to take that away. That's going to look like someone who doesn't care as much about the average American. I realize this may be crazy powerful things I'm saying here, but it's sort of like Paul Ryan saying, hey, look, we need to take SNAP away. Or people saying, we need a drug test for welfare recipients. It's like, good Lord, I get where you're coming from with it, but this is an attack. I mean, this is an attack on people as opposed to promoting helpful policies that will move the progression forward or giving the better opportunity for happiness and liberty, or excuse me, life rather. So I think people are looking at this administration coupled with the things that they are doing as this move towards a less, I don't want to say democratic, but compassionate. I get where they're coming from. I might be just completely articulating bullshit here right now, but it is... I get where they're coming from, but if you want to compare the man to the man, I think it's a little disingenuous. Hitler had way different political ideological aspirations than Donald Trump does. Donald Trump has done exactly what he wanted to do, and he has a legacy. That's it. If he doesn't get the another 4 years in 2020, this guy will be talked about for years to come, and that's all he needs. Does his business advance? Yep. Is his family good? Yep. Did I do the president thing? Check the box. I don't think he has any further political aspirations or ideological madness that he would like to promote in this country. Personal opinion? I'll give you a chance to respond to that.
Well, you covered a lot of ground there. I would, as far as the previous administration and what it accomplished in tearing things down, I would say...
Yeah, I should say not, I don't want to focus on the accomplishments. I would maybe like to focus on like the political, the ideology and what they would have liked to have done. Because I think that if they could have done universal health care, they would have done universal health care. They just couldn't. So you got something like Obamacare. But that's the message. That's the goal. And that looks far more compassionate, unfortunately, than any other thing. I mean, free healthcare just sounds more compassionate than anything else. That's my opinion, however. But that's not looking at economics. That's not looking at anything else. That's just saying the idea of it just seems more compassionate.
Right. I
unloaded so much right there. There's so much to unpack, and so much of it was so unarticulated.
I'll lead with this, and this is a real simple look at the gallows for your children and your grandchildren. I'm not so sure how compassionate doubling the national debt was.
Well, yeah, we can always come back to that, and I completely agree with you on that.
That's not very compassionate, dude. And right now, Americans are rolling their eyes, people in the international community. But as an economic thinker, and I've done my formal education in future economist, I look at having the warning signs universally. I'm not sure there's not a non-pseudo-economist who doesn't agree that having a national debt upwards of 90% of your GDP in value, meaning everything that America produces, folks, its gross domestic product, all roughly $20 trillion worth, having a national debt that is virtually equal to it is universally viewed as economically dangerous territory. If the U.S. currency, our dollar, were somehow not to remain the world's reserve currency, meaning they use the dollar as a safe haven when things go rough, that's how, aside from selling treasury bonds, which we don't sell enough of anymore to private investors, that's how we've maintained the status. Well, if either of those shifts at all, the world's currency or the treasury bond value, then that $20 trillion debt becomes a massive issue. Well, we're talking about, again, President Obama here, who ran stating not only that he was not going to add a cent, his words, not mine, to the national debt, but he felt like Bush had been treasonous in allowing the debt to be increased. So, I'm just going to leave my synopsis there. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that our government tries to do, and I agree with President Obama wanting things to be on a more equal playing field. I get that. I don't like the idea of people being sick when our country is the wealthiest country in the world. I get it. All right. The other side of the coin is, though, I think there's some things that government has no business doing in the first place, and we can look at just how many federal programs you can name that have been abject failures, and then we'll compare that to the minuscule number that have actually been successful. But yeah, as far as President Trump is concerned, I can't really elucidate on what his motivations are. I do agree that we took someone who's more of a promoter than he is a manager, was a manager.
Yeah.
His family's good, his businesses are good. Yes, I get that. I think when you surround yourself with hardliners like Pompeo, General Kelly, General Mattis, Mayor Giuliani, and also on his domestic advisory board is Newt Gingrich, I think we do see a pattern that the man is a hardliner, yes, but I look to something, say, like President Bush had Tony Blair, Prime Minister of Britain. President Obama had Angela Merkel, still Chancellor of Germany. And the fact, look at the closest friendship that President Trump has developed. And we talked about this before, but not only is it the President of France, Emmanuel Macron, but the nature of it and how he was willing to take what you felt was scathing criticism, at the very least repudiation, and then any other world leader, I maintain, would have received a barrage of criticism, if not directly from the administration, then via Twitter. I think there's more to this than just the man's off his rocker. And I know that's not what you said, but with all of the quote-unquote ravings and things that he goes on about, well, then look at the side of actually what's getting accomplished. For every new regulation, two have got to be cut, which I ardently agree with, turning the war effort over to the military, to the DOD, which I ardently support. There's a number of things. Moving, and you and I definitely disagree on this one, moving the embassy to Jerusalem. honoring our longstanding pledge to do so, I very much agree with. You know, I don't so much agree with his social policies, but that's another podcast. But overall, I guess in answer to your query, no, we don't necessarily agree with it. We don't necessarily agree with one another here. But I do think there is a method in the sense that, sure, call it trolling. He once said that he's the Ernest Hemingway of Twitter. People may not like it, but I certainly think there's a strong case to be made.
I was
going to
say, he will have a legacy in Twitter for as long as Twitter is
Twitter. He saved Twitter just like he saved CNN. Both were failing, on the verge of slipping to the back in every meaningful category against their peers until President Trump ran. So I'm not, certainly, anybody that's listened to this podcast before knows. I mean, I just rattled off some things that I strongly support the president in. You know as well as I do, and anybody who's listened to us before, I've talked about a lot more that I don't necessarily see.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You're
I'm not an apologist here. No. I'm simply giving a macro, well, I guess in the classical sense of the word, I am being an apologist, because that means to explain something to detail. Well, that's what you and I are both doing, so I don't mean to be long-winded on that, but you posited a number of issues which were strong, and I unpack it as succinctly as I can, and my first and foremost thoughts are as an economic thinker.
Yeah, and I think we most definitely agree with the national debt. I mean, that's at the end of the day, I think that's one thing over, like, if you look at the umbrella of all of the major issues, that I think for both of us becomes the major issue. But how to get to that is,
you may say, hey, how does this affect me? Why do I care? That's not the issue when there are kids starving in the street and all. Hey, it's going to become a real big deal. Like I said, treasury bonds are significantly less in value, which is one way, you know, they pay off old bonds by selling a new one. That's going to matter. If China's currency, they've been threatening for a while to try and push that to become a major reserve currency. Well, that could be a potential issue. If either of those things, let's say both of them shift, okay? The Roman Empire didn't foresee when the Visigoths cleared the horizon that their empire was going to fall that day, but it did. The Lion of England didn't see a colony that revolted in 1776 usurping it in its place of global dominance in 150 years. But it did. Okay, let's not be so arrogant as to presume that having a $20 trillion national debt and being involved in seven armed conflicts globally, having a defense budget bigger than the next 10 countries combined, is not capable of overextending our reach, just as it happened in Rome and London.
Yeah, it's a very interesting history lesson. I'll give you that. I mean, it's I think,
you know what, Nate?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's got to be a plunger around there somewhere, you know, that you could sit on for me?
No, I
let's see what you did there.
I do think that to picture or imagine the United States as this sort of...
We're not impervious.
Unmovable, unfallible force is looking through... rose-colored glasses, I suppose, because it's naive
to think. I mean, how many empires before us? I assure you, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Russians, the Soviet Russians, the Nazi Germans, they all felt like they were impervious. Okay, I'm pretty sure the United Kingdom felt that way. It stands to reason. I'm not saying it's hopeless. But I'm saying that we need to wake up in short and realize that it's going to matter. The things that I mentioned economically, like the national debt equaling our gross domestic product, I guarantee you that anybody listening to this or not listening to this that would roll their eyes at this would become suddenly keenly interested in all over Wikipedia trying to get educated real quick if suddenly we can't afford for everybody to take their favorite shows with them on all their devices. And, I mean, that's when Americans wake up, is when they're a lot of people are this way, but Americans in particular, it's cool to know nothing. Okay? It's the reality is when they get hit in the ass in the pocketbook, and then, oh, well, so services, yeah. You know what? You didn't pay attention when the Smith-Mon Act got repealed. I know I'm taking a leap here. You didn't pay attention when net neutrality, possibly, as of right now, where it's in the balance, but you didn't pay attention when that happened. you didn't pay attention when, you know, these things started lining up. Oh, well, now that there's a fiscal crisis and your freedoms are being splintered. You see what I'm driving at?
Oh, I get it. I mean, you're preaching the choir, dude. Yeah, 100%. I felt like a good venting session a little bit.
I think it was. Yeah. I think it sets you and I up. You and I, the vast majority of the time, we agree with the ends. It's yes. Our means that we differ on. And I think it sets us up very, very much so for a future. We need to do, like we discussed, the rating past presidents. I think it would be interesting. But I think it sets us up perfectly for some future things that you and I felt we wanted to, you know, to hit on.
Indeed. Indeed. And I think we will. We'll be back and we'll be doing these, whether we'll be doing some response question and, or not question, but topic with response in the future. It seems pretty cool because I think it allows for a little bit of solo articulation. But then, of course, being together, I think, is the best format overall.
You're the cool one, because remember, I've never been accused of being cool. So, and it fits well, me being the Nixon Republican, you being the Kennedy Democrat. I think, as far as our ethos goes, I think that fits, because Nixon wasn't exactly the rock star that either of the Kennedys were.
Very true. But doesn't take away
I'm
from...
I'm not a rock star.
I'm not a rock star. Well, my friend, we're at 40 minutes. This has been a pleasure. And
out of my ass.
Yep. So until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.
We will see you.